क्या धर्म जो दिया है वो क्या है देखो जो आओ तुम जो बॉडी भी फंजल्स पाला लो भाई जरा क्या बच्चा कोई नहीं हो जाए बच्चा कोई नहीं हो जाए तो
पाइप बता अच्छा क्लास नहीं है उसको नहीं
अभी
किसको मालूम ही नहीं मतलब
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
I think we're in paragraph 29. No, we did 29. We're in 30 now. Yeah. Anina, Aksharanu Baba Sukha Jaitwa Katanena. Vashishtadinam putrashotadikam iva tad avesh avasa evayam iti api nirastam. By this talk of defeating the happiness of experiencing the infallible, it is denied that all this could have been a mere indication of fascination with him, similar to such behavior as Vashishta's lamenting for his sons. Okay. It has been said, it's said in the Bhagavatam description. That what the Kumaras experienced in seeing Narayan defeated the experience of they were Akshara Jusha. They were already had fully realized Akshara. The impersonal, infallible, supreme. And this pleasure they experienced in seeing Narayan eclipsed that previous experience. So that means there's no sense in proposing that they were just, this is avesha, abasa. I translate it as being an imitation of fascination with him. Avesha is to become absorbed in something. I translate it here as a fascination. And abasa is a reflection, a shadow reflection. So I took it to mean that they were just pretending to be excited
about seeing Narayana?
Well, and that's compared to, I don't know the story, Vashishta, his sons were killed. Was he made to eat his sons by some demon? You know the story?
You can look it up in the
book, but I think demon Balvala or somebody fed Vashishta his own sons, killed them, cut them up, and cooked them up for lunch, and he ate his sons. But because he's such a great sage, he actually wasn't that disturbed about it, but he had to pretend to be disturbed, otherwise it would have looked strange that you eat your sons for lunch. If you don't show disturbance over that, the people will think you're very strange. So he pretended to be upset. Apparently, that's the story. So it's not that the four Kumaras pretended to be excited about seeing Narayan, just for formality's sake. And thus, Sri Swami makes a comment. Ata eva evoktam Sri Swami bir api, he says, Surupanandad api tesham bhajanandam adikyam aha iti. Sri Goswami says that their ecstasy was greater even than that of self-realization is stated here in the Bhagavatam verses in chapter 15. We have a problem?
Yeah.
We're in the wrong place?
I think the previous one we have not completed.
We didn't complete it? Oh, okay. Really? I remember reading the commentary. We read the commentary, so you must have finished the paragraph. Really? Yeah, okay, we did. Okay, yeah.
Anyway,
yeah, we did. Okay, so we can continue. Tasmad asti vaichitram api. Ata eva tire api vichitrataya praartitam. Therefore, indeed, there is variety. Well, yes, there is variety in the Supreme. That's what the Kumaras were excited about, seeing that variety. And thus, the sages prayed in terms of variety. When they commented, they expressed their excitement in their prayers, they described what they saw of the Lord's variety, expressing themselves in the following words. Cheto livad yari nute padayora meta ityadau. Ake che madhu vindeta kimartam parvatam vajet iti nyayena tarupad antaran veshana vayartyat teshamapi atanam veshana kautika bhava cha. Okay, they express themselves in such words as in their prayer, may our minds take pleasure like bees at your feet. Well, why do they distinguish if they're just experiencing undifferentiated Brahman? Why are they talking about bees at the feet? Brahman doesn't have bees at his feet. There's no variety there. So they're talking about particular parts of the Lord's body and bees humming around, buzzing around their feet, those feet. After all, there's a saying, dear mother, if one already has honey, why should he go to the mountain to get it? You know, honey is available on the mountain, but it's not easy to go up there and get it. If you can pick it up in the, you know, the grocery store across the street, why bother to go to the mountain? So therefore, by that logic of that saying, there would be no use of the sages searching for alternative imaginary features of his. If they were already, the material world all around them was just imaginary conceptions imposed on Brahman, and Narayana is just another one of those, so what? Why'd they have to go all the way to Vaikuntha to see more Maya? And they, in fact, showed no eagerness to search for anything other than him. It's not like they were interested in collecting illusory conceptions. They had no interest in anything beside him, so there's something special about this Narayan that they saw. He's not just another illusion. Okay. I don't have a commentary for here, I have a stub saying that we have to find out the story about Vashishtha. And how was it that he was only pretending to be upset? But I don't know the story, I still have to find it. Okay, so any comments or questions on that? Could you get my cup? And the tea? All right, if there's no problem with that, is it? It's not confusing? Then we'll move on to the next one. Kimcha, natesham abhidatmako nubo va drishyate. Pratyuta, nemur nidiksha davitripta drisho mudakai, and kama baba svavijinayar nirayeshu namstad ityadav. Abhidasya, tatprati yogi namaskara adyupalakrita abhidatmaka bhakti sukama eva drishyate. Okay, now let's look at what it seems to be that was the experience of the Kumaras. Moreover, we do not see that they experienced something devoid of dualities. Mahayavadis claim that they were actually seeing Brahma, not dual, but from the description it doesn't look like that. We don't see that they experienced something devoid of dualities, but we rather see just the opposite of non-dual experience. Just the opposite of non-duality is what appears to be what they experienced. It seems like they were experiencing the joy of devotional service, comprising the dualities which we get a partial indication of by their bowing down and so on. Okay, when you bow down, the thing about bowing down is you can't bow down in all directions, you gotta pick a direction. You know, if your head's pointing to something, then your feet are pointing in the opposite direction. If you're pointing your head at somebody, then you're pointing your feet at somebody else. So you gotta pick who you're gonna bow down to, where you're gonna bow down, which direction. When it's time to bow down to Mecca, you have to know where it is, what direction it's in, and bow down in the right direction. So that's duality. If you're bowing down, then you're pointing your respect at a certain direction, and not at the other directions. It means actually you're showing your feet to the opposite direction. So that's duality, that's picking and choosing. If you're gonna bow down to Brahman, you can't do it. You have to bow down in all directions. Also, they said, we pray that you let us be born in any hellish condition of life. Well, Brahmavadis don't talk like that. They don't want to be born, they want liberation. But they're throwing away their liberation. They're even willing to be born in hell. And then they say, but we want to remember you and be your devotees wherever we go. That's duality. Even abandoning the desire for liberation. Continuing. Tasmad, mai kopari nirhinatwad, deyamshataya patibhat atwad cha, natat jatiyam sukham, apyanya jatiyam karnam shaknoti, iti, sant yev anyata anupapati, siddhaya, surupa shaktir eva vilasa. Therefore, these spiritual varieties, that's what the Kumaras saw, spiritual variety in Narayana. These spiritual varieties are playful expressions of the Supreme Lord's supreme energy. That's what Jiva Goswami is trying to establish. That there's variety in the Lord, and that variety is manifested by his internal energy. And that is proven. This internal energy is proven to be acting by the logic of the given facts being impossible to explain otherwise. Now we're back to Devadatta eating, not eating during the daytime. Therefore, he must be eating at night. That same disjunctive negative hypothesis, hypothetical logic, some kind of, I think that's a term in Western logic. Disjunctive negative hypothetical deduction. we presume that he must be eating at night, because if he's getting fat, he's eating. And if you're eating either during the day or during the night. There's no, it's got to be one or the other. Or both, but not neither. So if he's not eating during the day, the negative disjunctive deduction tells us he must be eating at night. Yeah, am I wrong? They became fat because they were starving to death.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't say just he was had a bloated belly, but he was chubby and wholesome. You know, he was healthy. Okay. It says Pina. He was, you know, stout and strong. Not just, you know, bloated belly out of starving to death. Okay. So the logic is the variety's there. Where does it come from? Can't come from any material source. There can't be any material cause of the variety in Narayan. There's got to be a spiritual cause. That is his internal energy. By definition, the internal energy is what manifests variety in the Supreme Lord. That's his internal energy by definition. That doesn't tell us how it works or exactly what it is, but it's basic identification of what that energy is. The manifester of variety in the Supreme. Api chastu tavat jivan muktashayam tanmati vidyopadi patipalitasyaiva sato brahmanaha sakashat sri bhagavato gana prakashata sarvopadi vinyumukta mukti shayam api sakshat tadrisha tas dieveti suvyaktam natyantikam viganayantyamite prasadam ityadav. This is how the logic can be analyzed. Because material variety is not free from the illusion of imaginary features and shows itself as material variety, shows itself to be tainted with undesirable aspects, that material kind of happiness cannot evolve into the other spiritual kind. Kumaras are done with material happiness, but we see them excited. They're experiencing spiritual happiness, and it's not that material happiness can turn into spiritual happiness, because it's full of, it's contaminated. It can't become spiritual. Okay. Okay. And one second. For the sake of argument, we might allow that in the preliminary stage of a person's liberation. Okay, now this is the Mayavadi idea about being different stages of liberation. And actually this is what Jiva Swami calls Jivan Mukta Dashaya. The condition of being Jivan Mukta. This is my Shankaracharya is talking about. Those who are Jivan Mukta. They're liberated, but they're still in this world, still living in material bodies. Because we argued that that's not possible. Brahman realization, because Brahman doesn't have any parts or degrees, you've got to realize all of it completely, either all or none. But he's talking about, still Shankaracharya inconsistently is talking about this preliminary stage of Brahman realization, Jivan Mukta. Now, let's, for the sake of argument, allow, although it's illogical, let's allow it. Theoretically, that in the preliminary stage of a person's liberation, while still living in a material body, the personality of Godhead becomes revealed in his concrete form as expanding from the impersonal Brahman. Okay, that's what the Mayavadis wanted to say. Okay, let's allow that. And that impersonal Brahman, in the impersonalist view, has been reflected on the imaginary features of enlightened consciousness. It's, you know, there's a reflection on Brahman. There's like a coding of mode of goodness. And on that mode of goodness appears the personality of Godhead Narayana. He's the reflection in the mode of goodness imposed on top of Brahman. Well, okay, you can say that. Nonetheless, however, there is also the further stage of liberation, completely free from all imaginary features. And in that higher stage of liberation, the Supreme Lord manifests directly in his personal form. This is made clear in such statements as the Kumaras statement, or the statement about the Kumaras, that they did not consider even five, the Kumaras talking. They, great sages, do not consider even final liberation to be your actual favor. There is something beyond impersonal liberation. There is the highest liberation. I think final liberation is a confusing word here, because we're talking about another liberation beyond final liberation. That sounds confusing. This is called.
Can we call it?
Okay, I'll just put a mark on it. Yes. See, the word in the verse is adyantikam, and I have to, you know, I can't just say plain liberation. But then our statement is that there's another liberation beyond that liberation.
Isn't it that there are four kinds of liberation?
No, there's four kinds of annihilation.
Annihilation.
Yeah, liberation is one of the four. Yeah. Anyway, we're talking about impersonal liberation and beyond that personal liberation. That's clear enough. But we have to make it fit what's said in the verse. So I'll just make a mark. The problem is it's not really final. But it's not really final. I'll figure it out what to do with it later. Okay? That's also Prabhupada's translation. But we're going to have to modify it so it fits what Jiva Goswami is saying. You understand the verse? The Kumaras is saying that sages who realize you don't care even for atyantikam, which means liberation. But the word means the final thing, atyantikam. But Jiva Goswami is talking that beyond that impersonal liberation is another liberation, personal liberation. So it's confusing to call it final liberation, to call the impersonal liberation final. It's final in the sense it's the finish of your material existence. But there's another liberation beyond it. Yes? Yeah. When you're not a jiva anymore, it's not just you leave this body and give up your subtle body, but also you're not even a jiva anymore. Now you're Brahman.
So maybe according to the old books, there used to be patients. It must mean this Christ or this place. And then they say that there is something.
Yes. No, that makes sense. It's final liberation from the point of view of the Mayavadis, but our readers may be confused by putting that together. In the same sentence where he said that we say that there's another liberation. Because we got the Vaishnava point of view and the Mayavadi point of view, and you know, they're a little mixed up here. So I think I have to change the word final to something else. Yes? Who says that? Where? Oh, yeah, but where? I'm saying, Bhagavad Gita? So during Kadambani, different stages of what? Okay, but that's different stages of the development of Nishtha. Okay, well that's not, we're not talking, that's a different topic though. That's not, that's not different kinds of liberation.
No, not liberation.
Yeah. No, no. It's not that authentic doesn't make sense. It's just that it, it couldn't be confusing to the readers to use the, you know, to say final and then say it's final but there's another one after it. That's confusing, that's all. It's the final, it's, you know, it's, in a sense it's final liberation, but it's not final. So that's confusing. Okay, anything else about this paragraph? We didn't read the commentary yet. Let me read the commentary and then we'll discuss. The act of bowing down is an involvement in duality. The distinction of worshipped and worshipper, that's another distinction. One distinction is you're bowing down in a certain direction. Another distinction is you're the worshipper bowing down, and you're bowing down to what you worship. That's a distinction, a difference. In the impeccable duality, the personality of Godhead's divine energy is at play. In the duality of bowing down to the Supreme Lord in love, that's the Lord's divine energy. You don't bow down unless you have some devotion. Devotion is the Lord's divine energy. It's because that divine bhakti shakti has fallen on you, therefore you're bowing down. It must be so, because otherwise, if the variety seen in the personality of Godhead were material, the happiness devotees feel when they realized him would be faulty. They're happy, but without a good reason. Because he's not the absolute personality of Godhead, it's just another illusion. Why are they so happy if they're still an illusion? It would not be capable, rather, the happiness would not be capable of maturing into the most sublime consciousness. Suppose, just for argument, that the impersonalists are not wrong in saying that at least in the case of one who is virtually almost liberated from illusion, but still living in the material world, there is an indirect perception of Brahman through the form of Bhagavan. Let them say that. Still, this Jiva Mukta stage is not the final limit of liberation. According to the Mayavadis, there is yet another further perfection to be achieved. For the Mayavadis, the Jiva Mukta has to give up that shell and stop being a jiva. For us, there is personal liberation beyond that. The devotees of God do not care for impersonal liberation because their life of loving service is much superior. Okay. Now, any questions, comments? Yes? Nityananda.
Your translation is mentioned about the partial, this third line, comprising the duality is partially indicated by the
Well, that's the word upalakshana.
What is the meaning of partially?
Okay, that means that bowing down is one among many activities of devotional service. Devotional service is full of all sorts of varieties. It's not that your job is to bow down and you have to do it 400,000 times a day and you don't do anything else, like a, you know, you're at an assembly line in a factory and you're just a, your job is to bow down. No, there's so many other things to do in devotional service. Bowing down is just a sample. It's mentioned, but it's a sample of all the other things that, that, don't, that weren't mentioned. That's a collection of them. When you describe, you make a description only mentioning a sample, not the whole, not all the details. You know, you don't, there's a variety in devotional service. A sample of that variety is bowing down. But it's just a sample. So therefore it's called upalakshana, partial indication. Otherwise we could give a list of hundreds of different activities in devotional service, but it wouldn't fit in the verse. So yeah, that's what upalakshana means. It's a very common term. It means, you know, just giving a sample to indicate something that's more than that.
The logic what I understood is are considered that is ultimate. So in the Jivan Mukta stage, they are seeing an illusion of Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Right.
In the Jivan Mukta stage, they are seeing an illusion of Personality of Godhead.
Yes. Yes.
In the Brahman.
Yes.
But so the logic argument is that beyond that there should be another perfected stage, and that is the Personality of Godhead.
Well, for us it's the Personality of Godhead.
Yeah.
But if we just stay within the framework of their views, there is still another a higher stage of liberation when they're beyond being in a jiva, when they merge into Brahman.
Yeah.
So that means that, okay, they saw Narayan, but you know they weren't perfect yet. And therefore they shouldn't have been so excited. They were just looking at a better illusion, but still illusion.
So, is it like we are, by saying this statement, we are agreeing to their proposal that Bhagavan is an illusion?
No. But we're saying, hypothetically, if we even accepted it, if we didn't argue against that, if we just say, okay, for the sake of argument, go ahead and say that. But even within your own framework, it's not final, it's not ultimate, it's not the complete liberation.
So what we're trying to establish, they will say that this is not final, final is the Brahman realization.
Right. So then we argue, what was special about that experience then? Why were the Kumaras, who were interested in nothing material, so excited about seeing Narayan? Mm-hmm. If there wasn't full realization of Brahman. One thing is to say they were already fully realized. That was the previous argument.
Yeah.
They were already fully realized, and now, you know, they're pretending or something. You know, there's something going on, but they really are only seeing Brahman,
yeah.
And we think that they're seeing Narayan, but they're not.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're saying, okay, maybe they're just Jivan Mukta,
mm-hmm.
And this is the natural stage for Jivan Muktas,
mm-hmm.
to become fascinated with the Personality of Godhead. Because your realization is not mature yet.
Yeah.
But if they were like that, then they haven't achieved perfection yet.
Yeah.
And they're getting excited for no good reason.
Yeah.
Like they're celebrating, you know, prematurely.
Yeah.
That's the argument. But that goes against what the Bhagavatam is saying here.
Okay.
You know, it doesn't say that, you know, they got excited and then they realized they got embarrassed after that because they realized you shouldn't have been excited. No, they got excited, and so many good reasons are given by the Bhagavatam why it's good that it's appropriate they got excited because they didn't reach the final perfection. They say it, Brahma says it in his description, and the Kumaras themselves say it, that now we've achieved the ultimate perfection. So this just again contradicts the text.
So the statement basically means that what the Kumara saw is the ultimate perfection.
What
the Kumara's experience is actually what the ultimate perfection.
Right. But that duality they saw was spiritual duality. And that's why they were satisfied with it, because it wasn't material, it was purely spiritual.
Okay.
Spiritual variety. Manifested by the Lord's internal energy. Yes?
If they don't experience highest liberation, then they would be trying to go further, because it would be for them only one step. But if you can see the history that for example in fourth canto, you know, they are giving instructions, so it's not command, they're giving instructions as a devotee. So it looks like they achieved the situation and they stayed.
Yes.
They were, yes. And also, they know that Kumaras, they are greatest devotees, greatest souls. So, if they would just talk at this level, there would be only one kind of illusion for them. So, they would be known as a whole person.
They would be known as devotees of Saguna Brahman. And that contradicts what the Vedas say about Son of Kumara and his brothers.
Because they're greatest devotees, greatest people
Well, we're told, see, we're told by the Bhagavatam and other Puranas that they were great devotees, perfect devotees, but we're told elsewhere that they were perfectly Brahman realized. So we have to put the two together. Can't, not just one or the other, they were both.
Yes.
Yes, an upgrade, yes.
Also about the Goshen and the Goshen. Does it mean that they bow down, but we can see that they are
superior? Who falls down?
Kumaras. They bow down and they bow down, but we can see that they are also for prayers. Prayers is also one of the part of the Goshen.
Yes. Yeah, but this is from a previous verse, before they started praying. Sometimes, especially if they have plenty of prayers, bhajans and stotras, they recite. And they may, Shankaracharya encouraged Pakshopasana, worship of five kinds of deities, five deities. Vishnu is one of the five. So for sadhakas on the path, they should perform worship, they should bow down to their chosen deity, but you pick your own deity, bow down to it. But then, when you are fully realized, you don't need the deity anymore. You might put it for sake of encouraging neophytes, you might continue worshipping, but really you have no use in it. You can throw the deity in the garbage.
Going down, they go down to the most spiritual master, but then, does it mean that when they achieve the pure stage, they don't go down to anybody?
Well, you know the story about Prabhupada with the devotees in Mayapur? With devotees headed, Bhavananda Maharaj and others were walking with Prabhupada on the property in Mayapur. They went over onto the road, up a dike, out of the field, onto the road. You know, they had to climb up. So Bhavananda Maharaj held Prabhupada over the dike, onto the road. And then Prabhupada pushed Bhavananda away. He said, I don't need you anymore. So it's just like the Mayavadis. You know, they take help from the Guru to become liberation, then they kick the Guru away. And sometimes they even kill him. That's what Prabhupada said. Well, it's contradictory. You know, there's a lot of the culture of guru worship in the Mayavadi school. But also you get this phenomenon that one who is liberated, he just doesn't follow his guru anymore, doesn't have to be devoted anymore.
I'm just asking about this
actually fully realized?
Mm-hmm.
But, there's very few impersonalists who ever actually reach final perfection. Most of them are faking it anyway.
Mm-hmm. So, what
are they supposed to do? Well, they're supposed to not see any duality. So how can you offer respects to a guru when there's no difference between, how can you offer respect to somebody else when there is nobody else? If there's no difference, then offering respect is just offering respects to yourself. So they may do it just as a leela, you know, offer it, just like Krishna we read this morning, was worshipping Vishnu, you know, in his palace. So the Mayavadi, who's theoretical Mayavadi, may not exist, but theoretical Mayavadi who's fully Brahman realized, he can offer obeisances to whatever he wants because it's just offering obeisances to himself. It's a joke. It's a leela. Good, it's consistent.
But what does it mean to offer obeisances to yourself? Okay? Don't try to make any sense out of it. Okay. Yes, ma'am. Yes.
We are speaking, there is another Mukta, Mukti level of liberation beyond this. Is it similar to the Vastu Siddhi and the Swarup Siddhi?
It's similar. You know, we acknowledge the different levels of perfection in Krishna consciousness, but it's different for them. I mean, you know, their final goal is different than ours. We understand that you can fully realize your ultimate position with Krishna only by leaving this world. While you're still in this world, there's some limits put on it. You know, and the Sarupa city is when you actually don't have a body anymore. But you do have a spiritual body, and you have an individual identity and a relationship with Krishna in the spiritual world. But for the Mayavadis, you don't have any individual identity anymore. It's a whole different thing. So it looks similar, but they're aiming in a whole different direction. Okay, we can move to paragraph 31. No, we did 31. 32. Ata eva, yak. Kaschid idam jalbati gyanakarayam premakarayam chitta vrittam. Spelling mistake. Vritta is two T's. Okay. Chitta vrittam brahma prakashati tatra tutarasyam upari vaishishtyat prakasha vaishishtyam ityatraiva purushartha saratvam tatra tatra chitta iti tadapi swayam eva bhavishkritam. Okay, another Mayavadi attempt to explain what's going on. And that's also defeated. Someone might thoughtlessly propose, the word is jalpati, that Brahman reveals itself in mental processes of both kind, knowledge and ecstatic love. So some are Gandhis and some are Bhaktas. Brahman reveals himself to both of them. In the latter kind, in the meditation of ecstatic love, the proposal goes, there is simply a special kind of revelation because there's a special kind of imaginary feature. In both kinds, however, it will be said that this is the most essential goal of life. Okay, but then they're realizing Brahman in an illusion. You know, still, you could say that Brahman, it's Brahman revealing himself, whether it's an impersonal realization or personal realization. But still, according to their philosophy, the personality is just an illusion. So if they're seeing the personality, they're still seeing a upadhi, or an imaginary feature. And to say that that and impersonal realization are equally the essential goal of life doesn't make sense. How is realizing an illusion the essential goal of life? So this argument, however, is also self-defeating like the others. So the defeat of the argument follows the same logic. So therefore, Jiva Goswami doesn't repeat the details again. The same way as before. To make this proposal, that personal realization, impersonal realization, they're both realization of Brahman, therefore they're equal. They're both the perfection of life. But how is realization of what you say is an illusion the perfection of life? You see that Mayavadi's doing that. It's all the same. Bhakti, jnana, whatever, yata manta tapat, whatever, as many opinions are that somebody has or. But they're not all the same. Yes?
Usually, when you try to argue with them, when you try to prove that the party is highest, actually, they reveal their real nature. They never say that, okay, what is okay, what is okay, but then finally, when you try to argue with them, they will tell you that what is just a very...
Yes. It's dishonest. The Mayavadis dress like Vaishnavas or pretend to feel love for Krishna the way Vaishnavas do. It's dishonest because it's not the real attitude. The real attitude is that Krishna and devotion to Krishna are Maya. And they're not honest about it. Okay. Tasman nopadi tara tamya chinta. Bhavata kataya ityanena nirupari brahma bhuyad uparicha vaichitri sputam evasau svi krita. Consequently, there is no reason to ponder a hierarchy of imaginary features. That means, you know, one Maya that's better than another Maya. Narayan is the best Maya. There's no sense, no reason to ponder such a hierarchy of imaginary features. Since it is definitely acknowledged in the phrase, who have the taste for discussions about you. Let's see where that is. But anyway, I lost the paragraph. In the phrase, who have a taste for discussions about you, that variety remains even after the achievement of Brahman realization, free from imaginary features. So you can say Narayan is a better version of Maya. But the fact is that when, say, the Kumaras became fully realized, they saw variety, even in their perfection. Who have a taste for discussions about you is verse 48. Let's look at that verse, see what it's saying. 3:15:48. I don't get it, hold on. I'm looking. The macro is not working. Do you have 3:15:48 there? Thank you. Oh. Okay. Yeah. Natyantikam vidanayam japite prasadam kinvanyad arpitabayam ruva unnayaiste yenga twarangvi sharana bhavatakataya kirtanya tirta yashasham Kushala Rasagya. Such persons, I'll just read the last half of the verse. Such persons, taking shelter at your feet, do not care even for the highest benediction, namely liberation. And these persons, they're very expert and most intelligent in understanding things as they are. They engage in hearing narrations of your auspicious activities and pastimes, which are worth chanting and worth hearing. That's the actual perfection. That's actual ultimate liberation, and it's full of variety. Okay, I'll read the commentary. Just two sentences here. Claiming that the same perfection of life is achieved by jnana and bhakti does not save the opponent's argument, which tries to discredit the variety in the personality of Godhead as mere reflections of reality on illusory concepts. Variety is the essence of spiritual enjoyment, and without it, spiritual life is dull. Okay, any questions or comments? Yes.
The translation, somewhat thoughtlessly proposed both kinds of knowledge in aesthetic law. The revelation of Brahman in knowledge means what they're telling is that impersonal revelation.
Yeah.
But how they are comparing, like, it's like, that's why the toughest word is used, because they don't agree, both are saying that personal liberation, personal darshan of the Lord and impersonal.
Well, now they're pretending to agree. Okay. They say, okay, just like we said hypothetically, okay, we'll accept your idea. So now they'll accept our idea. Hypothetically. Or they do it, you know, to win our, you know, they want us to be on their side. So they say, yes, the same perfection is achieved by both jnana and bhakti. Because it's Brahman realization in both cases.
But then there's no need to
me see how this fits. Well, because that idea proposal is also invalid. We discussed, you know, why saying you get the same from bhakti and from jnana, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because if you're honest about it, it's not consistent with your philosophy to say that bhakti is equal. You actually, to be honest about it, consider bhakti inferior.
Yeah.
Okay, so therefore, what's this use of considering, you know, hierarchy of illusions with Narayana on the top of the scale when they're all still illusions? Therefore, forget all that. Let's just understand the facts of the matter that bhakti is ultimate liberation.
So that consequently, that statement is for the other argument.
Yeah. Well.
Because
yeah.
Right now they are agreeing. The proposed statement was they are agreeing. Both.
Yeah, but we're rejecting their agreement, saying you're agreeing.
Okay.
You're not being honest in agreeing because you really don't agree.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
About this word japa, you said that
Japati,
yeah. I think we have different kinds of arguments or discussions. Vada and Vedanta and we don't want them to japa.
Yeah, japa is a kind of argument. It's japa vitanda. Yeah, japa is quibbling. I don't think that fits here. Japa is when you're no, japa is word jugglery. Yeah, you play tricks with words. You use words in the sense that isn't really meant there, you know. And you prove something by misusing a word. Maybe that is the case here. So maybe you shouldn't just say thoughtlessly propose. As if japa just means jabbering. But japa isn't this, okay, let me say to myself your question. Isn't this japa in the logical sense?
This is also my conclusion that they speak it, but they cannot prove their words because actually it's contradicting their words.
Well, japa means like this deceptive proof. It's proof that is deceptive because you're twisting the meaning of the words.
Actually, it's the case because they say, but actually they don't give it.
Right, right.
They just went
right.
When you speak with them strongly, they say, okay, they don't need that.
Yes. That's deceptive. But is it specifically the kind of deception that's called japa? I'll have to think about that a little bit. Okay, we'll stop for today. We have a little more of this anuccheda, and then we move on to the next one. Thank you all. Glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam. And our Ishta Gosti will be held at 11:30. Thank you.